Glory to Jesus Christ! Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish presents Light of the East, a program revealing how the Eastern Catholic Churches have nourished the Roman Catholic Churches and today's world in profound ways through their histories, traditions, mysteries, and spirituality. Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya, pastor of Annunciation of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois, and this is a story of the Eastern Churches, an inspiring story of faith, courage, intrigue, mystery, spirituality, dissension, and reconciliation. But most of all, this is an expression of a great experience of faith through our unique divine liturgy. Join with me now as we look toward the Light of the East.
Light of the East is also underwritten by a grant from the charitable Koch Foundation, whose vision is to strengthen and propagate the Catholic faith by providing grant support for a wide variety of evangelization efforts. Learn more at KochFoundation.org. Koch spelled K-O-C-H. And Light of the East is also supported by Eastern Christian Publications, where you can find the prayers of the Catholic Byzantine Daily Office at ecpubs.com and easternchristianmedia.com. A broadband network. For you to learn more about the Eastern Catholic Churches, that's easternchristianpublications.com.
Glory to Jesus Christ. Welcome to Light of the East. I am Father Thomas Loya, your host. As a Byzantine Catholic priest, in other words, a priest of one of the Eastern Catholic rites of the Catholic Church, I am often asked by people, well, what is the difference between a Roman Catholic or Latin Rite Catholic and an Eastern Catholic? In my case, a Byzantine Catholic. And is there a single book that I could read about it? Well, I can't answer that question in one word. In other words, I can't just sum up in one sentence, although I've tried, or one example, I've come close as to what the differences are. And there isn't any one single book. There are many good books out there, but there's no one single book that I point to and say, well, this one has it all. But many good books, though, have parts and pieces and various degrees of completeness explaining what the Eastern Catholic Churches are, our spirituality and so on. If I wanted to sum it up, I would say things like this. Think of the human race. It's made up of male and female, men and women, right? Even though they're both are parts of the same humanness, we're all both human. Only some experience that humanness in a feminine way and some in a masculine way, but they're complementary and they're both human. Well, the church is the same way. The church developed along two fundamental lines, a basic Eastern approach and a Western approach. And this can be understood by grade school geography. You just look at the world, the hemispheres. There's a northern hemisphere, a southern hemisphere, eastern hemisphere, western hemisphere. You remember that. Well, draw a line that separates Eastern Hemisphere and Western Hemisphere. And what you're going to have is a model of how the church developed. In other words, when it spread from the area we know as the Holy Lands, of course, where the lands of the Bible, as it spread outward, especially from the apostles, as Jesus mandated them to do, to go out and teach all nations, baptize them, as the apostles went outward on that mission, they went to the east and they went to the west. And as they went to the different cultures, the church took on the character of those particular cultures. So if they went east, the church took on the character of the cultures, the Eastern cultures that it was in. If the apostles or missionaries after them went west, the church took on the character, sort of the expression of the Western cultures. Now, this is all the same faith. It's all the same belief, but expressed differently. Another way of explaining it is the Eastern and Western rites of the church are like different facets of the one same diamond. So that's some simple way of explaining it, even though as you can see, I had to use a lot of words. So there's no one singular way. You just have to understand that it's a difference of perspective or emphasis of the one same truth. It should not surprise us because that's how cultures are. It wouldn't surprise you that a culture in the eastern part of the world would have a different language, different foods, different history, and so on, as a culture in the western part of the world. That wouldn't surprise us, would it? Well, it's the same thing with the church. So it should not surprise us that the church is made up of different expressions, mostly along an eastern or western line. Most of the differences are in the Eastern churches. In other words, there's many more Eastern rites than there are Western rites. Although there were several Western rites in the church, for all intents and purposes, the one that remains is what we call the Latin rite. A lot of times people refer to themselves as a Roman Catholic, and that's okay, but most specifically, it's Latin rite of the Roman Catholic Church. And by that, I don't mean the traditional Latin Mass. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Latin rite or the Eastern rites. A rite is an ancient, venerable way of expressing the one same faith. Remember, I emphasize ancient and venerable, which means they're both equal. They're both ancient. They're both venerable. They've been around for 2,000 years. And they're both, of course, based even beyond that in the Bible itself, in the biblical tradition of the Old Testament. So this is what a rite is. A rite is not a religious order. Sometimes people think I'm part of a religious order. They'll say, oh, you're Byzantine. Well, what order is that? Well, it's not an order. It's a rite of the Catholic Church. We do have monastics. We don't have orders per se. In the West, they have what we call orders. In other words, they're derivatives of the original monasticism. But in the East, it's basically just monasticism. A rite is not an order. An order is not a rite. Hopefully, this isn't too confusing. I told you, it's kind of hard to sum it up all in one thing or even in one book. But let's get down to some of what makes it different. Well, ask yourself this. If you're a man, what makes a woman different from you? Or vice versa. Ladies, what makes a man different from you? There are some pretty fundamental things to answer that question. In other words, basic experience existentially, basic perspectives, the differences in bodies, biology, and so on, makes a lot of differences, even though they're both complementary and they both share the one same humanness. Again, same thing as a church. So let's look at some of these differences. And again, we're looking at things that are fundamental, and I'm kind of simplifying it. Let's take the West. What is, I'm going to call it the genius. That's how I like to compare the different lungs of the church, the two lungs, East and West, as John Paul II called it. I like to compare them in terms of their geniuses. In other words, their great gifts, their what they offer to the world, what they're strong in. The West is particularly strong in a number of things. One of those things is in its kind of rational approach to things, reason. And the starting point is the accomplishments of man as man strives towards God, as God reveals himself through human accomplishments. And we have examples of that. For example, look at Western cultures. What are they strong in? Things like law, a sense of order, technology, science, the Industrial Revolution. And with theology, scholasticism was a great gift, a great genius of the Western church, which, of course, the great figure there was St. Thomas Aquinas. The starting point also emphasizes the human suffering of Christ, and the liturgy is called a Mass, which refers to a table, which has an emphasis of the Holy Supper. And here's something really interesting, where you can really see the differences in a very clever way. The church that's built over the place where Jesus died on the cross and rose, those two places are actually under one basic roof of a grand church. The West calls that church the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. The East calls that the Church of the Resurrection. Isn't that interesting? Again, you see the difference. The West is emphasizing the human suffering and death on the cross of Christ. That is, of course, part of, a big part of salvation history, of our faith. The East emphasizes the resurrection. So it calls the church over that spot where Christ died and rose the Church of the Resurrection. See, it's a matter of emphasis. Same faith, right? Christ died and he rose. Well, the West will emphasize the death part. The East will emphasize the resurrection part. So let's get to the East now. Their starting point is that transcendence of God. And we say that God condescends. In other words, he bends the heavens. And that's why you will see in Eastern churches the motif of domes and arches. Just as in the West, you find the motif of, for example, the tall spires, or like the Gothic arches, those tall splayed arches, almost like arms reaching up with hands outstretched. Have you ever seen the famous Gothic churches like Notre Dame in France? That Western architecture expresses the fundamental approach or emphasis of Western theology. that approach of man striving towards God and God being able to be seen in the accomplishments of man. In the East, it's the complement. It is God who condescends, who we say he bends the heavens. And so if you bend something, it takes on like a curved shape. And so the Eastern churches use the motif of the dome. There's various kinds of domes, but that dome, fundamental dome motif, is used in Eastern architecture. And from that comes the arches. And in fact, we'll go one step further. In the East, we say that God bends the heavens and comes down to earth. So heaven is described or expressed in the figure of a dome or an arch. The earth part is described as the four corners of the earth. The earth, of course, is round, but we speak of it in four corners, and that is north, south, east, west. So the east uses a cube, perfect four-sided figure, that intersects with the dome. So we have the heavens intersecting with earth. There was heaven and earth united. And so when you fuse those two shapes together, you have these marvelous, what we call pendentives, or those these wide splayed kind of arch shapes in the church, almost like giant triangular shapes, which are oftentimes in the corners of the church. And on those giant triangular arched shapes, usually in the Eastern churches, is painted the four evangelists, because that part of the architecture connects the dome, the top, with the rest of the church below. And that's what the apostles did by their writings, by the gospel and their preaching. They brought heaven to earth through that. So that's why they're painted there. So there's a great integration between the architecture and the art and the liturgy of the church, East and West, but in particular in the East. So also in the East, you're going to have a sense of not only the transcendence of God and his condescension, but also his otherworldliness, his awesomeness. Mystery is going to be a very big component. In fact, it is the characteristic component of the Eastern churches. Yes, it's in the Western church as well, but the strength, the greater genius of the East is this emphasis on mystery, at being at home in the tension of paradox. Mystery, where something can be this and that at the same time, and we live in that confluence and intersection of the two. We'll talk more about the differences between the Eastern and Western churches when we return. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
Every day, Father Loya posts a brief 2-minute Facebook video on the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish homepage. You'll be amazed at what you can learn just by watching. Light of the East mission is Christianity's reunion, and to tell the story of the Eastern lung of the Catholic Church, we need your support. In order to keep Light of the East on the air, you can make a donation now by going to ByzantineCatholic.com. That's ByzantineCatholic.com, and then donate securely using any major credit card. With your help, we can keep Light of the East's illumination bright.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. How would you like to meet Pope Leo XIV's personal representative from the Dicastery for the Eastern Catholic Churches as he hears from us about our Eastern Catholic Churches and offers us insight and counsel? I invite you to the Byzantine Assembly in Whiting, Indiana. Here's what you need to know.
The Byzantine Assembly takes place Wednesday through Sunday, July 16th through the 20th in Whiting, Indiana. For venue location, events, and registration, visit ByzantineAssembly.org.
I'm Bishop Robert Pipta of the Byzantine Catholic Eparchy of Parma, and you are listening to our very own Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
You are listening to the Choirs of Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church under the direction of Timothy Woods in Homer Glen, Illinois. This is the music you hear on Light of the East and is sung during the sacred liturgy at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish. Order online at ByzantineCatholic.com. All we ask is a donation of $20 or more, which includes shipping and handling, to Annunciation Parish for each Theosis CD. Send a check made out to Annunciation Parish at 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. And may God grant you.
Welcome back to Light of the East. I'm Father Thomas Lawyer, your host, trying to explain the difference between the Roman Catholic Church, or Latin Rite, and the Eastern Catholic Churches. As I mentioned, we can't do it in one breath. We can't do it in one answer, one word, although I wish I could. I try. And there is no one singular book, but there are references. I'll give you some to go to. Things like Byzantine Seminary Press, God With Us Publications, St. Vladimir Seminary Press, Light and Life Publishing, Cistercian Publications, and also Eastern Christian Publications. These are some of the references, and we oftentimes refer to them on this program, that you can go to find some great books on all aspects of the Eastern Catholic Churches and Eastern theology, spirituality, art, and architecture, and so on. But back to some of the differences. In the East, you'll hear emphasis on words like transcendence and immanence, light, movement, participation, immersion. And the spiritual life is described in the East as an ongoing participation in the life of the Trinity. And there's a word for that. It's called perichoresis, a Greek word. It means the mutual indwelling of the Holy Trinity. There's a lot of emphasis in the East on our being immersed in a mystery, immersed in something, and transformed by it. That's another big word. And there's a little difference in the way we understand grace between the East and the West. In the West, grace is something, in a sense, I'll say it's created by God, and it is used to, in a sense, to be almost like applied to human nature, so the human nature can grow in holiness. Now, there's something similar but yet different in the East, and it's called uncreated energies or differentiations. To understand that, there's one simple analogy, which I think is actually pretty good. It is the analogy of the sun, you know, the sun in the sky, you know, the bright sun. We cannot see or come close to the essence of the sun. There's no way. Before we even get close at all, we'd be destroyed, just vaporized by the power and the heat of the sun. We can't look at it. Even from Earth, can't look straight at the sun. That's how powerful it is in its essence. But what do we receive from the sun? Well, we call it the sun's rays, things that emanate out from the sun that then touch us and change us. They transform us. In other words, we get immersed in the sun, especially now during these hot, lazy days of summer. And what happens? Our skin turns color. It can actually get burned, too, if we're not too careful. And the sun's rays also brings to us things like vitamins, like vitamin D. In other words, so it hits us, it strikes us, it goes into us. We literally absorb the sun. You know, as humans, we're almost like, in a sense, we kind of joke about it, we're like prunes, like prunes, or even plants that absorb the sun, you know, in that process of their turning it into food and so on, nourishment for them. The sun strikes us from its rays, not from its essence. It does something to us. It goes actually inside of us. We absorb it. We become the sun. The sun becomes us, but not in its essence, in its uncreated energies, which the West would refer to as grace. They're a little bit different concepts, but they arrive at the same thing. In other words, something from God is going to transform us as we open ourselves to that transforming power, whether it's grace or whether it's the so-called uncreated energies. And why do we open ourselves to that? Well, in the East, it's because the starting point is something very positive. We're made in the image and likeness of God. So nature for us, the natural, is what is good and holy. In other words, a human person is by its essence good and holy. It's just that we lost some of that. We lost some of that likeness to God from sin. Now, in the West, there's a little bit of a different approach. Again, similar but yet different. The emphasis is in a nature that has to be continually renewed or have grace acting upon it. In the East, the nature is already good. It just requires that cooperation with the uncreated energies of God to continue to grow into what it already is. In other words, more of the same, becoming more and more the better version of itself. And we call this theosis, or divinization, or deification. There's three words that can be used. It's the mystical union with the bridegroom Christ. It's the indwelling of the Trinity within us. We say that God became man so that man might become God, and God with a small g there. In other words, we don't become God in his essence, but we actually partake of God's nature. And that comes from the second letter of St. Peter, chapter 1, verse 4. The reintegration of the human being into the fully alive person that God created and destined is what it means to grow in holiness. The West would call it holiness. The East would call it theosis, divinization, deification. And how do we get there? Well, we get there by praxis and contemplation, kenosis. These words all are seen very strongly in the life of Eastern monastics. In other words, we might call them asceticism, self-emptying. In other words, dying to self, rising to our true self, reaching a state of, in the East, they call it apatheia, from which we get the word apathy. It doesn't mean we don't care. Apathy in our common usage means we don't care about something. But it comes from the word, the Greek word apatheia, which means impassibility or dispassion. In other words, we don't let the power of our fallen passions, the fallen side of our passions, rule us. We rule it. In other words, we don't allow anger to get the best of us. We don't allow envy. In other words, the seven deadly sins in the West, the East would call that the eight vices, or the eight logismoi, which refers to thoughts. So again, similar yet different. And what we would do in the East is we would say that through the praxis of asceticism, of penthos, in other words, constant repentance, constantly saying, we say so oftentimes, if you've ever been to a worship service in the Eastern churches, you'll hear how often we say, Lord, have mercy. In fact, a lot of times people say to me, oh, you're Byzantine. Yeah, Lord, have mercy. Or they'll say it in language of our church, our mother tongue, the Slavonic. They'll say, Hospodi pomiluj, Hospodi pomiluj. Yeah, I remember that. I attended a Byzantine liturgy one time. It kept saying that over and over again. Yes, we do. That's part of our penthos, part of our constant repentance. But that opens us up then to that, to the uncreated energies of God, the contemplation of God, and also fasting, practicing the virtues, and praying. And one more thing that the great spiritual masters of the Eastern Church would tell us. I don't know if you hear it as much in the West. You do to an extent, but in the East, it was a big deal among the spiritual masters. And that was the remembrance of death. In other words, to think of our death and judgment every day, for a few minutes every day, it would change your life. And the view of the passions in the East is also fundamentally positive. It's just that we see a fallen side to them because of sin, because of original sin. So we don't want to get rid of our passions. We don't see human nature in its fallen side, in its concupiscence, as fundamentally flawed or bad. It is flawed, but it's not fundamentally flawed, not fundamentally bad. It is fundamentally good, made in the image and likeness of God, but it has flaws. It has a fallen side. So our life is all about trying to move beyond, trying to extricate us from the tyranny. The Eastern masters call that the tyranny of our fallen passions, where these things rule us, and we don't want them to rule us. So we work to overcome their power. We don't get rid of them. We want the fundamental stuff that our passions are made from, because our passions are actually good. They're what they are. They're actually our desire for God, our striving for God. We might use the term eros, where we get erotic, but I don't mean erotic. I mean in the original form, eros. Eros means that striving of the human soul towards God, the yearning for God. And that is the basis of our passions. The passions are like an energy force. It's just that that energy got wounded. It got corrupted. It got fallen. But it doesn't mean our passions in themselves are bad or wrong, or human nature is fundamentally or intrinsically flawed. It's not flawed in its essence, in its nature. It's flawed more from an aspect of the fallen side of all of our good stuff. So what's helpful about that, I find helpful, especially as a priest, when I counsel people, work with them in spiritual direction or confession, I always tell them that take your sin, take your fault, but walk it backwards. Walk it back to its origin. In other words, if you suffer from sins of lust, for example, and very easy for that to happen today, obviously, because there's all this pornography and images and so on. So a lot of people struggle with lust. Okay, walk the lust back. What is lust? What is it? It's our desire for intimacy, for God, for love, because God is love. And of course, we desire that. So what do we do about that? Well, if we know the origin of it, that should give us a positive image of ourselves. And you need a positive image of yourself if you want to grow in holiness. Otherwise, you get despondent or despairing, disappointed. Those are all the D words. I call them the devil words. But if you know what it comes from, then you work on the positive. You develop the positive aspect of that, the aspect of true love, of true intimacy. You seek that, and that will help you overcome the tyranny of the fallen passions. There's so much more we could say about this, but hopefully you got some idea of the differences between the Latin Rite, or as people call it, the Roman Catholic Church, and the Eastern Catholic Churches. Two sides of the same coin, different facets of the one same diamond. Thank you for listening. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
To hear Light of the East again, visit ByzantineCatholic.com and click on the Features and Programs tab, and on iTunes. Thank you for listening to Light of the East. We encourage you to tell a friend about Light of the East and to visit ByzantineCatholic.com. Light of the East is produced by ADC Media.
Catholic radio is, it's training for the troops. It's a interaural of the ear boot camp. The folks who listen, who grow in their faith, grow in charity, grow in all the virtues, they then go out and exert an influence far beyond just themselves. Catholic radio has an exponential effect for bringing people deeper into the faith.
Dr. Ray Guarendi thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we will return to the Light of the East. To learn more about Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish, visit our website, ByzantineCatholic.com, where you will also find an archive of all of our programs. In order to continue Light of the East with its mission of Christianity's reunion, we need your support with a donation. Any amount will be a blessing. Please make out a check to Light of the East Radio and send it to Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. That's Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, spelled Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Or donate online on the homepage of ByzantineCatholic.com. From the Light of the East, a new dawn of unity is in sight. God bless you, go with God, and may God grant you many happy years.